Each of us has a unique career story to tell. For some, these fly high like rocket launches. For others, they're more like the game of chutes and ladders, with advances and setbacks along the way. Either way, we learn countless lessons from these experiences. And that's what we put into the spotlight here at Career Sessions Career Lessons. Join discussions featuring a variety of guests sharing their stories of ups and downs, as well as the secrets of their success and what drives them to continue moving forward. We break down the tools and resources that will help you establish your dream career and realize your professional goals. Here's your host, J.R. Lowry.
Hi, I'm J.R. Lowry, and this is Career Sessions Career Lessons, which is brought to you by Pathwise.io. Pathwise is dedicated to helping you be the best professional you can be, providing a mix of career and leadership coaching, courses, content, and community. Basic membership is free, so visit Pathwise and join today. Today, my guest is Seth Kasten. Seth is the CEO of Hologenics, which describes itself as the human potential company. Its flagship product, Celliant, is a performance textile that converts body heat into infrared energy and is a key ingredient in a variety of world-class brands across a range of industries, including athletic wear, everyday clothing, sleep systems, healthcare, and much more. Seth is a lifelong athlete and has always been passionate about the intersection of sports, wellness, and technology. He founded Hologenics in 2002 and has led it ever since. Prior to starting the company, Seth was in private equity with a focus on real estate. He earned his bachelor's degree in business administration from Pepperdine University, and he lives in Santa Monica, California. Seth, welcome. Thanks for doing the show with me.
Thanks for having me, JR. Excited to talk with you.
Look forward to having a conversation and learning a little bit about what you're doing. So you run a performance textile company. So give us an overview of what your firm's all about.
Absolutely. Our brand is called Celliant. C-E-L-L-I-A-N-T, and that's a combination of your cells and Reliant. Our technology is powered by your body, and so we make products that are textile-based that harness the energy from your body and convert heat to infrared, which has many physiological benefits. And so anything that has our technology embedded into it is going to help harness your body's energy and improve your basically your overall quality of life.
Sounds exciting. As a marathon runner, I probably should try it out because I could use all the help I can get.
Yes, we've been fortunate enough to sponsor a few marathons. Our socks help with, you get blisters, sweaty feet. Your body's trying to stay in homeostasis, right? 37°C or 98.6 Fahrenheit. And so that work to maintain that core temperature, the result is that we're giving off about 100 watts of energy at any given time. So if I could plug a light bulb into my head, whether I'm sleeping or running a marathon, that light is on. And so our product allows our body, it harnesses that energy. And then when we improve circulation in the body, it helps maintain the core temperature and allow the body to direct its energy wherever it can be, whether it's exerting performance side or recovering or sleep.
So you were working in private equity before you started this company. How did you come to start the business and how did you develop or acquire the original technology?
I was really fortunate. I have a degree in business administration and my first few work opportunities were in private equity. And so I was exposed to a lot of different investments, different teams, people that had a vision, trying to build something to improve our environment, our world. And that inspired me. Rather than invest in these companies, I'd rather create. And then I met the inventor, David Hornick, and the technology and what he was doing resonated with me. And I had an experience. I had a surgery and was able to work with the technology. And it really showed me firsthand the benefits that it has. Been hooked ever since.
So you talked a little bit about some of the applications in passing a second ago, but what are the main ones in terms of where the technology gets used?
Such a great question. Thank you, JR. And what's hard is that blessing and a curse, it helps so many things. When you improve circulation in the body, you have this whole host of benefits. At the same time, people want to know exactly what it's going to do for them. And it really depends on their body and where they are. But the circulation, the blood flow, the oxygenation to our cells, that's a real primary factor in our health. And being able to improve the cellular respiration rate and direct infrared onto the mitochondria enhances the performance of the body. Not to get too technical, but infrared is an energy source for us. And that's what our core benefit is founded on.
So infrared, again, we don't have to get too technical. We'll probably go beyond the level that most of us or either of us could talk about it. But infrared then gets redirected into your body and has those kind of benefits that you're talking about in terms of improving blood flow, circulation, cell oxygenation, all of those things.
Exactly. And when you look at something like strength, the more circulation that you have to that area, the stronger the muscle can respond. And we've done studies in canines to show that when you force blood into a muscle, that strength output, however it's measured, force per kilo, you see an improvement. And so by being able to direct more circulation to muscle groups when an athlete's performing, you're going to see a strength and endurance, a stamina benefit. And then when you're recovering, you want to eliminate metabolic waste from the body. And that's a function of circulation to a large part. The more circulation to a given area, the faster the metabolic waste is cleared. And we spend about a third of our lives sleeping. We sleep to rest and recover. If you can improve circulation while you're sleeping, you help with thermoregulation. A lot of times we wake up because we're too hot or too cold, right, or we're sore from laying on one side. Well, that pressure point, the more circulation you can delay that, you're going to have improved sleep quality. So when you look at what circulation does for the body, it has this wide parameter of benefits.
So this may be a silly question, but like take your strength application. You know, if I'm doing something that's requires arm strength, does it matter where I'm wearing the technology in my clothing? Does it have a general whole body benefit, or do I want to wear it like in my upper body if I'm doing upper body work?
It's a local effect. It's going to affect where you have the product on. I'm wearing an Under Armour Salient shirt. It's going to be in the shoulders, the chest, or the shirt. And there's not a hard line. It will radiate down my arm. But if I'm looking for my feet to improve how they feel, wear on my socks, it's going to be a targeted local effect. There's no energy organ in the body, right? We have our heart for blood flow, our lungs for air. Energy is made in every cell individually. And that's a Krebs cycle, ATP. And so if you can direct infrared into that area, wherever that area is going to have the benefit.
And do you have to tailor the technology? I mean, active exertion, recovery, sleep, medical situations like the one you mentioned a few minutes ago, your own. Do you have to tailor the technology for the different uses, or is it a pretty standard technology and different fabrics that you get woven into?
There's the core infrared output that you're trying to measure or that you are measuring through mechanical testing. And at the same time, as we grow, we want to have a formula that's for sleep, for targeted just for sleep, an energy formula for when you need to perform. And you can certainly look at ways to fine tune the formulation for a desired targeted benefit. At the current evolution of our technology, Salient, whether you're sleeping or performing in a competition or looking to maximize your ability in that given moment, the formulas could be the same. And we're looking at what's the maximum amount of infrared we can get back to the body without changing the environment. So this isn't something that plugs into the wall. You go into an infrared sauna, you can only go in there 10, 15, 20 minutes. With our technology, you can have it throughout your day because you're just working with the environment.
You've talked a little bit about some of the benefits, right? And turning infrared heat back on the body. How do you do controlled testing where you look at recovery and people who wear this as recovery or sleepwear versus people who don't? You know, what are some of the tests that you or your clients do to quantify the benefits?
You're asking about how do we target those types of people and fine tune our product for a specific outcome. When you're talking about somebody measuring for recovery or sleep, we have 10 published studies. There's always going to be skeptics. You know, one of the things that I learned is that validation is not binary. You know, for some people, you're sitting at the dinner table and your wife or your husband or your friend says, oh, I tried this. It's amazing. You should try it. And you go try it. And you're like, that's great. And for other people, They go, oh, well, they have 10 published studies. And you go, well, I don't care. Like, so what? Like, I don't know who they are. I don't know. Does that really work? So In our experience, the best thing we can do is introduce the technology, show people, open their minds to like, this is possible. You can enhance your environment. I mean, we have Faraday bags now, and you're looking at clothing that blocks radiation because we understand how a cell phone can be dangerous. Well, just in the same manner, there's things that can be helpful for you that you don't see too. So what our body is doing is actually generating healthy wavelengths of energy and light that will improve your performance. And you know what we've been able to measure so far, our seminal study is 153 people, and we're looking at tissue oxygen levels. And tissue oxygen is the best sort of gold standard of how do you measure a benefit or an increase in circulation. And if you're looking at, like, again, getting technical, arterial blood flow, you can put a device in an artery and measure how liters per minute, how much blood is going through that space. But if you're looking at the peripheral tissue and you're looking at transcutaneous measurements of oxygen, it's an indirect measurement. And so what you're looking at is this body, in our case, when you're looking at TCPO2, the study I'm referencing, there's an increase in tissue oxygenation. And so that shows that the body's getting more nutrients, in essence. And when you understand that, then it helps with performance or recovery with sleep. So we're looking at the foundational claim. And then people go, well, I want to understand, well, how does that affect strength? So we have a grip strength study that measures an improvement in grip strength and shows, okay, well, what that tissue oxygenation increase translates to is an increase in grip strength. And that's been one endpoint we've looked at.
Irrespective of whether an individual believes or wants to look at the studies that you've done, you've got some major brands that you're partnering with. You're wearing an Under Armour shirt at the moment. I know they're a partner of yours. Who are some of the other well-known brands that you partner with?
We're, at the end of the day, a B2B opportunity, and we're looking for brands to adopt the technology and understand that their consumers, if they're not asking for it already, they will be soon. And when you talk to people one-on-one, like in this environment with your audience, it's just intuitive. It makes sense. And you go, wow, we're taught traditionally the way to improve our lives is through better diet, more exercise, more sleep. But there are other ways, just passively by surrounding yourself with infrared, that you can actually harness your own energy to improve your quality of life. And so the brands, the adoption that we have, Under Armour was an early adopter. It's always hard when you want to start sharing your part. We have about 65 partners, so it's not, you know, it's not possible to list them all, but KT tape, you know, kinesiology tape that's used when you think about volleyball players or athletes, triathletes, that tape, they've been an early adopter. We have brands that do bedding like Bear Mattress, you know, Medline, the Curad brand, which we know that green logo has elbow and knee wraps, ankle wraps. We work with brands like Defend to do for sports performance recovery for professional teams and military, Excel wetsuits. If you can stay warmer in the ocean, if that's helping your circulation stay warmer, you have enhanced bottom times. You can extend the operation. So you have so many things tied to our circulation, our ability to thermoregulate ourselves.
You started the company more than 20 years ago, so you've had a great run of success and operation over the last 20 years. What's the company look like today in terms of, you mentioned you've got 65 B2B clients. How many people, how many locations? Are you selling in a lot of different countries?
It's been, as you said, over 20 years for $50 million in sales for us personally, and over $1 billion in retail sales in terms of the product, the people, the consumers that people have bought and purchased that have our technology. So even though a lot of your listeners have probably never heard of us, at the same time, you know, we've been able to really make a mark for certain applications and with certain people. And it's just required a certain level of dedication and belief that when you explain this technology to someone and they understand what it can do, that they're going to be interested and want to use it. And there hasn't really been a secret sauce to it, to the extent that if you went to your MBA business advisor and said, here's my business plan, you know, rule 101 is build a product for a demand. And we built a product where there isn't a demand, and we're trying to generate that demand and build that demand. And I think for the most part, we've been very successful in that and look to continue to be successful.
Well, you know, when you do something that's groundbreaking, like what you guys are doing, you have to make the market, right? So the sort of traditional rules of go where there's already demand doesn't work so well, you know, when you're trying to be an innovator. So you've got to get out there and blaze a trail like you guys have done.
Thank you for saying that. That's certainly what we're endeavoring to do.
So what's ahead for you in terms of the next few years? What are your big strategic priorities?
I think in addition to growing the brand name recognition, looking at other applications. So we started out as a additive to a yarn or a fiber. And from there, we expanded to a way to print or to bond in films and screens. And traditionally, we've looked at how to improve our own performance. And in that, we've discovered that there's also benefits for agriculture, as an example, and how plants process production and growth. And so we've been exploring agricultural applications that I think you may see in the next short time period. Those are really the two main applications that we're looking to develop. And as we talked about earlier, targeting certain benefits and being able to have a formula that's for sleep or for energy. But our ethos and our core is just how to broadcast to the world that infrared is a benefit and we can deliver that.
You mentioned you got a bachelor's degree in business administration. Back when you were in school, what did you foresee yourself doing professionally? I'm sure it wasn't this, since you didn't know about it back then.
As naive as I was smart enough to not have an idea of what I was going to be doing. I was really interested in a lot of things. Being a jack of all trades has its pluses and minuses. Some people argue you're better to just focus on one thing and learn that. I was always too fascinated by all the different opportunities to think really what I was going to settle on. For me, it's been about the people I work with, and that was the most important thing. And the product was almost secondary. I mean, the product needs to work, and the fact that it provides a health benefit is this amazing plus. But waking up every day and the people you work with, you want to have a good team that you believe in and that believes in you. And that was always coming from private equity. The companies wasn't always the ones that had the best product, but they have to have the team to deliver the product. And in some cases, a product might not be the best one, but they had the best team. I obviously feel I have the best of both. But for me, looking back from college, I just knew that I was passionate about whatever I was involved in, and I would deliver my best effort, whatever I ultimately decided to pursue.
What was it that led you into private equity out of school?
A lot of that was just coming from maybe a conservative background, that something you can fall back on, understand business, make sure you don't get taken advantage of. There's no formula for that. Regardless of what you major in, you're going to learn about the humanities and have your sort of GE curriculum and chemistry and algebra, calculus. So having the business focus allowed me to understand business law, case studies, what things to look out for. And at the end of the day, I've always wanted to be a creator and build things.
Did you foresee yourself being an entrepreneur before you met your partner and decided to go into business together?
You know, I grew up in the TV age where they would have As Seen on TV and the infomercials would come on. And I always thought, like, wow, what could I invent? Like, what would be a great product? A better hair cutter, the Flovie, whatever it was.
So clearly you're a Ronco fan.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I think I always knew I wanted to do something, but what form that takes and how that evolves, that's been the journey.
When you think back to your early days as a founder, what were some of the biggest mistakes that you made that you learned from?
There's been a lot. So I have a lot to choose from. I think the more mistakes you make in those early days, it's just more indicative of the effort you're putting out, because at that point, it's just every so many decisions is going to be one that you would have done differently. To deny that, I think, is to not be able to be honest with yourself. Some of the biggest ones, going from despair to we've made it back to despair. You think something goes well, you have a great meeting, and you're telling your family and friends, you know, you signed somebody and then it falls through, and or you sign someone and then they can't make the product. And there's always an unforeseen something down the road. And then when you go from 2, 3, 4, 5 people to 15 or 20, and then there's an economic, there's something macro that has nothing to even do with your business, you know, problems in trade, tariffs. And so now you've got to go back to seven or eight people. That's always been my toughest challenge, is dealing with the personal, like the people I hire, I care for them. And then when you have to make a change or downsize, those are the hardest conversations, much harder than trying to raise money or talk to a board.
Yeah, I mean, because it's your business, right? When you're an entrepreneur, you wear everything much more on your sleeve. And everything either feels really good or feels really painful when it happens. And the ups and the downs are inevitable. Very few people have the Mark Zuckerberg, it only went up and up and up and up kind of story with Facebook. And given that most businesses fail, some of my friends have said, you have to be incredibly optimistic and probably a little bit delusional to think that you can be one of the ones who succeeds as an entrepreneur. So it's hard not to have those failures, I guess. I think everybody does when they start a company in one way or another. Overall, how do you find the experience of being an entrepreneur? What do you like the best?
I think being able to stay at it, you know, to the point you're making, maybe you don't expect any one individual endeavor to succeed, but you believe and hope over the trajectory of your career that there'll be one or two or several that do bear fruit. And there's always been just enough progress for me to continue to invest and dedicate my life in building this. And what I've enjoyed, just building on what I was saying, it's the people and the relationships that you make along the way, because at the end of the day, you're sacrificing your time and, you know, you're dedicating your work to something that is intangible, other people may not see or appreciate or realize. And so it has to be clear for yourself. And then, you know, like you said, if you're not Mark Zuckerberg and it didn't just take off in the beginning, you're going to have these peaks and valleys. You're going to have these nights where you're waking up palpitations and you're like, am I doing the right thing? Like that, I think, just helps define your focus and help clarify for you as an entrepreneur why you're doing what you're doing. And then when you get back and distill to your motivation, that will then push you past the next wall, the next mountain. And the thing you don't know is like how many mountains are out there ahead of us, you know, how many, like it's always about the journey, right? And not the destination. Right. And so as long as you're getting fulfilled through the journey and you're seeing progress, for me, that's been the reward I've been looking for. Obviously, I want this to be successful long-term and have it be understood the way you think of Q-tips or Band-Aid or Kleenex. Mm-hmm. Salient is infrared. We're delivering infrared.
Yeah.
And that's our mission.
You talked earlier about people not necessarily knowing your product. That reminded me of the old BASF ads. I can't remember exactly how they worded it, but it was like, we don't make the products you know, we make the products you know better. And that's very similar to what you guys are trying to do, in essence, right?
That's exactly it. I use that example myself, and you quoted it perfectly.
Well, my memory is reasonably good, unless you listen to my wife, in which case it's terrible. So you've talked about people a few times. How would you describe your leadership style?
It's really changed over the years. In the beginning, I thought it was important to sort of exert your authority and show you're not afraid of a confrontation, or that you command respect when you walk into a room. And if somebody makes a mistake, you have to call them out, you have to discipline them, you have to make an example out of them. And that was sort of even going into private equity. That's just sort of the hierarchy or coming from private equity. And then as I matured and understand, you're making your employees are extension of you in a real, real sense, especially in a small team. People talk about work-life balance, and that's kind of a misnomer, like especially today with a smartphone. Even if as an employee, I want to have my own space, I'm going to be checking my phone. I'm going to see an email from work. So it's almost impossible to not be affected by your job, you know, 24/7. You know, as a leader, what I want to show is that that's a safe place for people, that it's not a place to create anxiety. If there's a problem, we'll deal with it. We'll talk about it. The filter is in the hiring process, right? If you don't get the right person, you've got to start over. The sooner you can recognize that, the better. It may not be easy, but as I've gotten better at being able to identify and understand, and I'm able to confront that situation more quickly. So my leadership style is servant leadership, getting out of their way, getting the right people, and then making sure that they have what they need, that they understand the vision that, I've articulated clearly, what we're all rowing towards. And once that message can be echoed back to me and I'm like, okay, you get it. You understand what we're doing. Be with God. If you need anything, let me know.
How does that translate into things you think are important in terms of the culture that you've worked to create in your company?
Well, post-COVID, everything changed. In the past, if you were working from home, you were slacking off, you're playing hooky, you're taking your kid to a movie, like that was just shamed. And now working from home is, I work from home. And so as far as how you evaluate that, it can be challenging. You have somebody that works in a location and you your only experience with them is through Zoom. For me, again, goes back to hoping you hire the right person and trusting that if you didn't, you'll get through that. And to the extent you did, you've got to give them the freedom they need. If they want to go to a Pilates class at 11 a.m. because that's the teacher they like is at that time, great. Yeah. And if they need to go to their kid's performance, or they have to, something changes and the doctor's only available at 1:30, like whatever it is. I mean, I almost got fired for going to a dentist appointment and they're like, no, you can't do that. You know, you have to do that on a Saturday. And I was like, he's not there on a Saturday. And they're like, well, you have to find a dentist. I mean, that whole mentality to me was just, and that was like, you know, that was what I was running from. And so to be able to give your employees their own ability to regulate themselves, like tell them what you need, when you need it by. If it's not there, then you have a problem. But if you're giving them enough time and you're clear on what you need, then give them the space to do it on their own as they can. And it's different. We're dealing with people that have a lot of passion, a lot of vision. Not that everybody doesn't, but I've had jobs where you're just punching in and punching out. That's a different time in your life.
Where do you choose to focus your time versus what do you leave to others?
That's a great question, because selfishly, I'd love to have as much time to spend with my son or pursue things that I like or exercise. At the same time, I come from like a micromanagement sort of mindset. Like I want to reread their email. Like the faster we've grown and the more people we've had, it's sort of forced me to be like, okay, you can't read 10 people's emails every day. So then you learn to let go, because if you can't control that, then why are you trying to control something else? And then you realize, you know, you zoom out further and like, okay, again, I want to focus my time on making sure the mission, the values, the objectives of the company are clear. So many times you ask somebody, well, what are the values of the company you work at? They can't answer that. And I think Hologenics, people are really clear on what they're doing, what they're building. The larger you get, the easier it is to have defined roles, and the less you have to have people do multiple functions. And it just becomes a better process that gets better results.
Somebody, one of my very first podcast guests, a guy I'd worked with years before, started a data analytics company. He goes, you know, at first, you kind of have a pulse on everything. At first, you do everything, and then you have a pulse on everything. And then you get to the point where you realize this company's big enough that not only can I not have a pulse on everything, I can't know what everybody's doing every day. And you just ultimately have to sort of condition yourself to relinquish control and ultimately put the right people in the roles that are important to you and make sure that they get the job done, but trust that they know what they're doing on a day-to-day, minute-to-minute basis.
That's exactly that journey you just described, articulated. Yeah. I was exactly thinking of each stage, you know, where I was and what was happening. And when you have that realization, it's really clear.
So what do you look for when you hire people into your company?
That's so hard. People can interview great and just not work out. And maybe somebody doesn't give their best interview, but you'd be making a mistake to not bring them on. I was talking to a colleague about hiring process, and if you think about it, you have somebody that's going to be spending 40 plus hours a week at your company, and that's the majority of their waking time. And you're going to hire them based on a 45 minute, 30 minute hour interview. Some companies don't even interview. It's all through email. You talk about it, divorce rates, 50%, but what's your success rate going to be spending an hour with somebody and deciding how they're going to be for your company? So, you know, what I look for are just the ability to not have like a canned response and to be authentic and to not go into the meeting with a set mindset of I mean, obviously you want to be prepared. You want to know the job you're applying for. You want to be able to talk about your skills and weaknesses. You know, now with Google, you can see like, what are the best interview questions? Like, and you hear case studies on how to screen people. It's a gut check. And the less bias that I have in that process, the more intuitive I can be. And so for me, it's about creating a framework to bring someone in, to hear about their lives, to give them the floor. And if they interest me and I feel like obviously they're interviewing, they've passed the screening process already, so they have the right on paper skill set for that position, that's almost like a given. Now you want to know, can I work with the person? Am I going to get irritated? You know, are they going to irritate me? Am I going to irritate them? You want to be able to have honest conversations with people as fast as possible. You know, sometimes it's easier to share your most intimate secrets on the bus with a stranger than family. At work, right. I think the paradigm is changing from, oh, you're at work, you know, you don't cross personal work. But the reality, it's all connected. So if somebody's having a problem in their marriage or somebody's dying, or you go through these life events and they can't talk about it at work, how can they bring their, that you have to create a safe environment for your employees to share in a way that is protected and confidential so that they have support at work. Instead of work being an abrasion or a point of friction, it's actually a point of support that's lifting up your team. When you're interviewing people, you're looking for people that are willing to be vulnerable because you're being vulnerable to set an example.
Yeah, I mean, years ago, I went to a training program. It's probably been almost 30 years at this point where we talked about masks and shields, right? The masks we work, the shields we put up at work. And I think to your point, I mean, a lot's changed, right? I mean, the whole sort of alpha male command and control style of leadership. I think we're mostly past that, although there are still remnants of it. But at the end of the day, it's really hard to feel like you're bringing your authentic self, your whole self to work if you have to wear a mask, right? Or you have to put up a shield to feel some sense of safety. And so I don't think we're completely there yet. At one level, you need to get the job done, right? So there's a balance, I think, that as individuals, we need to strike. There's a balance as managers, we need to strike. And it's COVID kind of made it was a step change shift, but it's certainly something that's not perfectly understood still, at least from my perspective.
As a mass shield, the idea that you have to deliver, like we've talked about a 4-day work week, and some of the feedback has been, well, I don't want to do that because then you're telling me I can be off Friday, but I'm going to be stressed out because work's still going to be coming on Friday. And yeah. So it's like a day off that's not really off. The other analogy I've heard is protector and projector. Mm-hmm. Your protector is trying to protect you and is going to be telling you, don't do that, don't say that. It might even be critical. That's a bad idea because it wants you to survive. And that's from just your genealogy, your ancestry. We're built in to protect ourselves. Your projector, which has to be kind of fed and encouraged, is saying, speak out, do what you know is right. Follow your passion, your heart, follow your intellect, follow your intuition. And so that's usually what gets crushed first. And so how do you strengthen and develop that and encourage your employees to have that projector voice and not go into protector mode?
Coming back to hiring, do you feel like you've gotten better at hiring over the years?
I've gotten better at hiring over the years in the sense that I've handed that off to other people. So I think I've gotten better at being able to sort of spot someone that interviews really well, but maybe isn't the best candidate. I've gotten more patient. In the beginning, when you need a role and you're so overwhelmed, you're like, oh, this person sounds great. And you're just like, go. And so I think we have a little more discernment and we can take our time. The team that I have now has, you know, been with us for a few years, some more than half a dozen. So I think that the employee retention is the best sign for me that I have the right people.
How many employees overall do you have at this point?
We're about 10 full-time, and then we have another 10, 15 that are half or more. You know, you're asking about our footprint. We have 7 offices globally, or boots on the ground, and we're able to extract or extrude fiber in the US, in Europe, in Asia. Okay. So we can really deliver our customers wherever they're sourcing to build their product.
Yeah, presumably then you've outsourced a lot of the production itself.
We don't own any plant or equipment. You know, we control the formula and grinding the particles just as a fun fact, you know, the hair on our heads is about 100 microns. Our fiber is one our powder is 1 micron. So 1/100 the thickness of a human hair, to give you an idea of the scale. And the yarn itself is only about 10 microns or a tenth of the thickness of a human hair. So the minerals have to be ground small enough and dispersed correctly that they can fit within that matrix. And to your point, we control that. And then we contract or we partner with brands, manufacturers to extrude the fiber, the yarn, which is knitted into the fabrics, cut into the garments and sold by the brands that we see on the shelves.
Switching gears a little bit, do you have particular routines or habits that help you be effective?
Because I've been doing this for so long and there's been, you know, a lot of starts and stops. The best thing for me is to be able to keep what I'm doing fresh in my mind. And so that can counteract habits or patterns. What for me, the best habits and patterns are, it might sound sort of cliche or corny, but it's like personal hygiene, keeping my house clean, keeping my bed made. Like I want to have my life in order. And then within that order, I want the flexibility to focus on emails or to have an R&D meeting or and having a consistent exercise program. And, you know, I've been able to do almost 10 5Ks with my son, who's 9, like just showing him your children are interested in what you're doing, right? So for me, the energy and the passion has been based on being able to have a set routine in certain areas of my life, personal care, diet, sleep, and then being able to be free to travel or see something or pursue something in a given moment that's unique.
I mean, to some extent, I've described before, I remember reading a story about David Lynch, the movie director, who would eat the same thing pretty much every day, I think, for breakfast and lunch. His view is, I got bigger things to think about than what I'm going to eat every day. And, you know, Steve Jobs wearing his black turtleneck every day. I mean, those are a couple of examples that are a little bit different, but you know, you want to focus your energy where it's going to have the most impact. And having your energy focused on, is my house a mess? And should I be more focused on cleaning that up versus how's my business doing? You've just kind of taken that out of the equation by just making sure it's done all the time.
That's exactly right. And to add on to that, when I'm doing those things, I can be in that moment. And that's a good exercise for my mind, because so many times we're trying to write an email, but we're thinking about our to-do list. Our mind gets fractured. And one of the habits I've tried to develop is that when you're doing a repetitive task, sort of busy work like that, to just be focused on that task and kind of block out. And then when I go back into my world, so to speak, I'm just recharged and I can see things clearly. And it's just a good excuse to have a break. I'm doing the dishes. Like I don't need to think about anything else. That's what I'm doing. I want to do a good job of that. And then when I'm done with that, I'll check back in on my world, like, and just create this space. It's like a meditation.
Is there a time of day that you're most productive?
Definitely in the morning. You know, if I can go to bed early and I wake up at 4:30 and I don't feel tired and I can get an hour of writing in, journaling. Again, that's sort of like a cliche, but it's true. Like it's everything is quiet. Nobody else is in the house, is awake.
Yeah.
And it's like free time. During the middle of the day, at the end of the day, you're like, okay, I've had a hard day, whatever. I just check out being able. The other time, I guess, for me, late at night, same thing. Yeah. Everyone's asleep. And so late at night or early in the morning are my most productive times.
I mean, for me, it's definitely the morning, and it kind of definitely slides downhill as the day progresses. I've never really been a night owl, but obviously I have a lot of friends who very much are night owls and can't function in the morning until they've had like 4 cups of coffee. So we're all different. It's how you figure out how to make the best use of that time, I guess, is what matters.
And once you have kids, it becomes harder to sleep in.
Yeah, very true. My kids are all grown at this point, so I don't have to revolve my life around their schedules, but I certainly remember those days well. When you think back on your career so far, what have been the consistent strengths that you've drawn on?
I think my motivation and the interpersonal connection, you know, knowing that sometimes it can feel very alone to be on an entrepreneurial journey and you get a lot of skeptics, and to be able to go into the office each day, you know, pre-COVID and now Zoom, but like have that team that's in there with you and sort of you feel like you're in the trenches together. Everybody is working towards something that they want to create and manifest. And that's really I think, wrongest motivation. You can't really fake interest in something. I mean, maybe for a little while at first, but in order to really push past all the challenges you're going to have as an entrepreneur, you really need to be able to draw on bigger meaning that's going to push you past sort of the temporary roadblocks that you're going to inevitably encounter.
What have you had to work on over the years?
We talked about my change in like leadership style, being honest with myself, or that process of being able to be what other people see in you that maybe it's hard for you to see. I love the Johari window model. I don't know if you've heard of that, but yeah. So you have a quadrant of four spaces, and your top quadrant is what people see and know about you. And then you have a quadrant where what you see about yourself, but you hide from people. And then the opposite quadrant is what people see in you, but you can't see in yourself. And you're trying to go to the bottom quadrant, which is what is unknown from other people and to yourself. And that idea of embracing that and pushing through the fear of that, seeing yourself for like all the warts you have and all your shortcomings, but still believing in yourself, you know, that's frankly a challenge for me that I still have every day, right? You're constantly, when you do better, then you expect better out of yourself. And growth isn't linear. We talked about that. You're going to have setbacks, and being able to sort of convince yourself like what you're doing is the right thing takes a certain effort and stealth. I've been through this process of trying to understand, you know, why is this important to me? You know, wouldn't it be so much easier to do this or to do that, to be here talking to you and saying, no, like this is, you know, really believing that everything that happens is for a greater purpose to build you to where you are today. That's more than just sort of blind faith.
I think ultimately you're talking about having a growth mindset, right? This belief that you can get better, that nobody's perfect. Nobody will ever be perfect. You have to accept your imperfections, but work on improving them. And for a lot of people, I think they get that. And I think a lot of other people really struggle with it. And they sort of, they just feel like their development sort of becomes static as a result of that. What do you do to recharge your battery? And what do you do to keep yourself energized?
You know, that's one of the things I struggle with, because some days there isn't enough time and you're like, well, I need some downtime, but I should really go to sleep. And you're like, want a little more time, like in my day that's conscious, awake, before I go to sleep, because all I've been doing is, you know, work or whatever it is, you know, something that's high stress. And then you don't get enough sleep. You indulge that sort of short-term fix. And then the next day you're tired. So staying recharged and staying energized for me is a function of creating time outside of work that can help balance the push that I do at work. And there's periods where it's not sustainable. I mean, I've had periods where I've worked over 100 hours a week. You know, I've had vacations where I did very little for a week. But overall, it takes a continual effort and push to build towards your vision, your success, your growth, whatever, however you define that. So that's something, you know, recharging, and a lot of times through exercise, there's that great feeling after you've really pushed your body physically, and you just feel, sometimes you don't want to do it, but once you do it, it feels great. And trying to find those opportunities, spending time with family usually is recharging. There isn't an answer that fits for every day on that, you know, and you're not always able to do it. You just have to kind of understand, you know, take your rest when you can and create space for the things outside of work when you can. And if you're not doing enough of that, you know, I've had team members reach out saying, look, I need 2 weeks off. Like, I need to focus on my family. That's not going to happen in like a large company. I'm like, great, take 2 weeks, be with your family. That goes back to my leadership style and creating that space for people. And when that person takes that time and gets recharged, then they can come back and give their best.
Last question. If you could pick one thing to go back and tell your younger self, what would it be?
I think the biggest experience for me is being able to have a higher level of confidence that's beyond your years, right? They say youth is wasted on the young. Like,
right.
My younger self, I still doubt things probably that I shouldn't doubt, but my younger self doubted everything and was really interested in becoming the best version of myself. Not that that's changed, but it can become an obstacle to growth if you're paralyzed by an action because you're not sure. You have to just take a step forward and trust that if you're off course, yes, you will have walked further away from where you're going, but in the long run, you'll get there faster. And I think that's something that, don't touch the stove because it's hot. Well, unless you touch the stove and feel that, it can be hard to really understand what that experience means. And so my younger self, how would I be able to trust more, understand more without making the mistakes myself?
What's that old adage? And this one I'm not going to get right about. I hear, I see, I do. And experiential learning is more powerful, right? It just registers in your brain. And sometimes the only way, we say this about our kids, like, got to let them learn the hard way, right? And we've all gone through those periods. So I think that's just part of life. All right. Well, this has been great. Been really interesting hearing what you're up to, what the company's all about. Fascinating to hear about technologies that can improve lives, and glad you guys are getting them put into a broad range of applications, whether it's, as we talked about earlier, active exercise or recovery or sleep or recovery from a medical incident or whatever the case may be. It's very cool.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to explore these topics.
Thank you as well. Have a good day. I want to thank Seth for joining me today to discuss his company, Hologenics, their product, Celliant, his broader career journey, his thoughts on leadership and management and hiring, and some of the things that he's learned thus far in his career. If you'd like to make the most of your career, visit pathwise.io and become a member. Basic membership is free. You can also sign up on the website for the Pathwise newsletter. Follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to Career Sessions, Career Lessons. We hope the nuggets of wisdom shared today help guide your path to the successful career of your dreams. This podcast series is part of Pathwise.io, which is here to help you live the career you want. We provide a comprehensive mix of career and professional development events, insights, tools, and exercises backed by a group of leading coaches and other career management experts. If you aspire to something more or just something different in your career, join us at Pathwise.io. You can find us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. See you again on the next episode.